Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Immortal by Loretta Hignett, narrated by Julianne Irons. Chapter 1. If someone shows you who they are, you believe them the first time. When the last man I dated told me that I needed therapy, I don't think this is what he had in mind. He would have meant traditional therapy, in-depth sessions with a certified psychologist. Instead, here I was, sitting across from a fake therapist who possibly wanted to torture me to death instead of healing my damaged psyche. The alleged fake therapist crossed her legs and smoothed her beige skirt down on her knees, settling herself into the armchair across from me. "So, Imogene Gray," she said, tapping her pen against the notepad on her knee. "Tell me a little about yourself. What brings you here today?" It was a good start. It was what a real therapist might say. She certainly looked the part, in her early 40s with light brown hair tied back into a low ponytail, and her freckled white face bare of noticeable makeup. She wore neutral tones, the beige skirt matched with a raw linen blazer. Her horn-rimmed glasses were completely round, giving her a studious air. She gazed at me with a neutral expression that matched her neutral wardrobe. Nothing about her was suspicious. I was going to have to get cold, hard evidence before I attacked. The room itself gave no indication that the woman in front of me was not what she said she was. It looked exactly like a room that a therapist would use. It was cozy, smallish, but not too cramped. The therapist sat on a plush armchair. I sat directly opposite on a three-seat sofa. The sofa was big enough that I could lie down, stretch out, and cry if I had to, which was probably what it was designed for. Two boring abstract paintings decorated the eggshell white walls. On one side of the room, a large built-in storage wardrobe was barely noticeable, save for the tiny white handle. I itched to search the wardrobe. It might contain stationery, cleaning supplies, and spare tissue boxes. On the other hand, it might have manacles, black candles, and bloody hunks of human flesh stored neatly in Tupperware containers. Guess we'd find out eventually. The only other thing in the room was a small coffee table next to the armchair, with a scented candle and a book arranged neatly on top, which I clocked as potential evidence. A round, fluffy rug lay under our feet. We sat in a small consulting room of a multidisciplinary wellness center in Broadwood, just outside the busy business hub of the city. The sign outside had advertised a hypnotherapist, a massage therapist, and a Reiki practitioner in residence. A trauma therapist was not mentioned. The wellness center itself checked out. It was a real business with real qualified practitioners renting the rooms. The woman in front of me, however, had only been renting this room for a little over a week, and I couldn't find her name on any Professional Therapy Association websites. That wasn't evidence, though. I'd have to go through the motions for a bit longer. I looked down at my feet, hoping to give the impression of shyness and hesitancy. I wasn't the greatest actress. I wasn't even a very good liar. I was more of a blunt instrument than a fine-edged paring knife. This was important, though, and I had to try to tread carefully until I was sure of who she really was. If this woman was an innocent human, then beating non-existent information out of her wouldn't be polite. I stopped and swallowed. I'm not sure where to start. The therapist, she'd introduced herself as Marion, put her pen down on the notepad, and gave me a look that I could identify as being empathetic. "It's okay," she said, smiling gently. "We have a whole hour. We can just chat about unimportant things if you want to." I had no idea if her empathy was genuine or not. Despite all my experience, I'd never gotten any good at reading people. Some things I was never going to learn. Some things I couldn't learn. Like intuition, for example. You would think that someone who had been around as long as I had might get better at listening to her gut. My gut told me nothing. That's why I had to gather solid facts before I acted. I couldn't just crush this woman's skull or torture her until she told me what I needed to know. I needed to be certain that this trauma counselor act was just a pantomime to get what she wanted. Killing innocent people wasn't something I was fond of doing. I avoided it as much as I could. And if she was the person I was looking for, she was going to be a lot tougher than she looked. I would have a fight on my hands. A fight meant ripped flesh, blood, and pain. At the thought of my pain, my skin prickled for a moment, and for once, I didn't automatically ignore my fear. It would make sense that a person who sought out a trauma counselor would be frightened. I looked up and met her eye. "Okay," I said. "I suppose I can tell you about the date I went on last Saturday. It made me think that I might need some counseling." She nodded sagely. "Yes, please tell me about it." "Well," I took a deep breath. "I've been feeling lonely lately. It's been a long time since I've had any sort of emotional connection with anyone, really. I find it hard to make friends." I let my bottom lip pout out slightly, trying to display a little emotion. It was ironic. I was so used to being lonely that it was almost a personality trait. You could put a picture of me under the Wikipedia entry for alone. I've been suppressing unpleasant emotions for so long, I barely felt anything anymore. It felt odd to try and act like I was unhappy. Experimentally, I let my bottom lip quiver. The fraud therapist nodded, but didn't say anything, so she clearly bought it. She waited patiently for me to go on. "And," I let the hesitancy creep through my voice, "I always lose all my good friends, so I'm really reluctant to make any new ones. It always hurts when they leave me." Despite being emotionally stunted, I was telling the truth. I thought it was wiser. If I was right about this woman, she might be powerful enough to tell the truth from lies, and she'd get suspicious. She could attack first and get the upper hand, and I couldn't risk it. I bit my lip for a second and quickly stopped, thinking I might be overdoing the sad facial expressions. I went on. I guess I thought it might be time to start dating again, just to try it out. Put myself out there, you know? "It can be hard, yes, but that's very brave of you, Imogen," the fake therapist said softly. "Please go on. Tell me about your date." "Well," I began, "I got on the usual dating apps. I created a profile, and it wasn't long before I was getting some matches. I had some great profile photos." "Of course," Marion said. "I'd expect you get a lot of attention. You're a very pretty young woman, quite exotic looking." "I guess I am." "You must be mixed race, aren't you? You have an interesting accent. What's your ancestry? African, Danish, South American mix, maybe?" I felt my face harden. "Something like that." She hastily scribbled something on her notepad. "I'm sorry. Go on, please. Tell me about your date." I tried to ease the hard lines of my face as the metaphorical red flags started waving right in front of me. A real therapist wouldn't have asked that. She was definitely the evil sadist I was looking for. Then again, a bad therapist might ask that. She might just be terrible at her job, which is why she was advertising her services cheap on social media. A bad therapist might have gotten curious about my ancestry and blurted it out, and tried to cover her embarrassment when she realized just how offensive the question was, just like Marion was doing now. I suppressed a sigh. This was harder than I thought it would be. I'd have to draw this out, tell her a story, and wait for her to light the candle and say the words. I cleared my throat. I matched with a guy who seemed great. He looked normal in his profile photos. He was good-looking, but not too handsome. They were candid shots, nothing posed, no portraits either, so he didn't look like a narcissist. It was just him in the photos, so I didn't have to guess which guy he was in a bunch of group shots. He wasn't wearing a hat, so I knew he had hair. Not that that matters, of course. He didn't have his height in his bio. "I'm sorry," the therapist cut in, clearly curious again. "Why would that matter?" "Men are predictable," I told her. "They catfish just like women do, but they're bad at it. If his profile photo is a group shot of guys, he's always going to be the ugliest one in the group. If he's wearing a hat in every single picture, it means he's bald. If he doesn't show his face, and he says he can't because of his job, it means he's married and looking to cheat. If he puts his height in his bio, he's only looking for casual sex. He does not want a meaningful relationship." Marion frowned. "How do you reach that conclusion?" If they put their height in their bio, it means they want to attract the kind of woman who wouldn't date them if they were short. Those women are shallow and stupid. The only reason a man would want to attract a woman who is shallow and stupid is just for easy fun. That is a harsh assessment, but overwhelmingly accurate in my experience. She raised an eyebrow. It sounds like you're looking for people's failures. If someone shows you who they are the first time, you should believe them. Or don't, and just watch the evidence pile up. Indeed. Please go on. Marion waved her hand at me. I took a deep breath. So his profile photos raised no red flags, although there were obligatory shots of him in a boat, holding a big fish. It shows he's a good provider, I told her. There was also a photo of him posing with a Bengal tiger, which shows he's adventurous, likes to travel, and he can tame wild creatures. They're predictable photos, but mostly harmless. She nodded and made a note on her pad. I couldn't make out all the words upside down from that far away, but it looked like it said, "This bitch thinks she's Sherlock Holmes." It was a fair assessment. I can't say that I'm not judgmental. With a lack of gut instinct, I'm left with making assumptions based on tangible evidence. I'm usually right, though. If only this woman in front of me would give me some more hints about what she truly was, then I could make my move. So we matched, and his messages were respectful, with no sexual innuendo at all. If they give you the slightest hint of a dirty pun or a suggestive question, you know they're only after casual sex. This guy was clean as a whistle. He only asked about what I did for a job, where I was from, that kind of thing. What did you tell him? Where are you from? Where were you born? That red flag waved again. She seemed like she was desperate to know my ancestry. She could be coldly calculating what purposes my flesh-spilled blood would best serve her, which tend to vary depending on the person's accumulated collective trauma they inherited from their ancestors. She could also be just curious and bad at her job. Ugh. I was born in Africa, I told her honestly. I've lived all over the world. I'm studying history and genealogy at the moment. I'm a student. All true statements, but I had to rush on before she asked me anything specific. I asked my date what he did, and he replied that he was working as an investment banker, but he was really an entrepreneur. He was interested in developing his own cryptocurrency. Even the therapist smirked. Men really were so predictable. I carried on with my story. We didn't message back and forth for very long before he suggested making a date for the following night, which is a good sign. He lived on the other side of the city for me, but he offered to drive to my side of town, so I wouldn't have to travel far. I thought that was a nice gesture. He also offered to meet me at a bar down the road for me, and not at my house, which was another good sign. I really had fallen for it, too. Marion frowned. Why is that a good sign? This woman had clearly never dated a man before. He had his own car. Tick. Self-sufficient, I explained. He offered to travel closer to me. Tick. Generous and caring. He didn't suggest he pick me up at my house. Tick. Thoughtful and intelligent. I'm not following that last one. Wouldn't it have been better if he'd offered to pick you up? I stared at her. Would you give your home address to a strange man you met on a dating app? She nodded. The skin around her eyes tightened slightly, as if she were infuriated with me. But she masked it quickly before I could properly assess her expression. Please go on. The night of the date arrived. I dressed up and walked down the road to the bar to meet him. He arrived just before me. I saw him walk into the bar ahead of me, wearing exactly what he'd said he'd be wearing, so I'd recognize him. So he was punctual, which means he respects your time, and he was wearing what he told you he would be, which means he keeps his word. This time, I was sure that I didn't imagine the slightly bored, cold tone Marion used. Was she getting impatient with me? More red flags. A real trauma counselor would not be bored or impatient with her clients. I worked to keep my face from hardening. If I was right, and she was the creature that I was looking for, I was still going to make her listen to this whole story. I was still outraged about it, and I wanted to share it with someone. Even if that someone had to be an evil blood witch pretending to be a trauma therapist. I offered to buy the first drink, which he accepted, which shows he's not intimidated by a woman with money. Another point to him. He was charming, he was interested in me, and he insisted on buying the next round. It was all going smoothly. Until, Marion prompted. After the third drink, he started talking about cryptocurrency. I'd already told him that I understood crypto. I bought a little of several different types when it first came out. I check in on each one regularly, and I use it quite frequently, too. Someone like me was always interested in anonymous, untraceable, and launderable ways to manage her finances, but I didn't need to tell Marion that. We started talking about crypto privacy wallets, I went on. I have several, and I'd already told him that. Inexplicably, he started a lecture about how cryptocurrency works, using really simple terms, as if I would have a hard time understanding it. I'm not the most subtle person, so I let him go on about it for a while, then asked him what concept he was having trouble with. He got this look on his face, a kind of, oh shit look, like he realized his mask had slipped and he'd started mansplaining. He knew I owned and used crypto, but he felt like he needed to explain it to me. It was insulting, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt and changed the subject. Marion nodded, but didn't say anything. I noticed she'd started bouncing her leg up and down, just very slightly, a sign of impatience. Or it could be a tick. I couldn't assume. We talked about the weather and East Coast versus West Coast. We talked about football very briefly. I'd finished my drink by then, and he offered to buy me another one. It was my round, but I knew he was driving, so I ordered another wine and asked if he wanted a coffee instead. He asked for another beer and said he'd be fine. He was drinking full-strength lager, I told her, ignoring her bouncing knee. I'm not going to assume a person's tolerance, but I thought he'd be pushing it if he needed to drive home. That's not my business, though, so I sipped my wine and didn't think much of it, until he finished his beer and ordered himself another one. I ordered some bar snacks. He didn't touch them. As soon as I realized he was getting tipsy and wouldn't be able to drive, I mentioned it to him, and he laughed and said that he might need to leave his car here at the bar and sleep on my couch. I lapsed into silence. Marion waved her hand in a go-on gesture. She was definitely getting impatient. Of course, I brushed him off and said that he could always just Uber home. He just smiled at me and changed the subject. He wasn't pushy. He seemed to be genuinely having a good time. And apart from the cryptocurrency mansplaining, I was having a good time too. We talked for a little while longer. We had a nice light-hearted argument about Monty Python, of all things, and he ordered another round, even though I hadn't finished my glass of wine yet. This time, he ordered a whiskey, a double too, so he would definitely be over the limit. Not my problem, though. Or it wasn't, until I decided to leave the date on a high note and started to wrap up. I wanted to see him again, so I suggested a picnic on the weekend. Now, I pointed my finger at Marion, who flinched slightly, as if she hadn't been listening and had been caught out. Maybe. This is a good test to see if your date is interested in you or just sex. Does he want to see you in the daytime or not? Turns out he was very interested. He knew a perfect picnic spot, and he could get a great quiche recipe from his mother and make it for our date. I frowned, thinking about how I'd fallen for it. I honestly couldn't tell if he was sincere or not. I'm not good at reading people. You're good at making character assessments. Marion wasn't even looking at me. She was doodling on her notepad. I started to make my goodbyes, and again, he mentioned that he'd be over the limit and couldn't drive. This time, he asked me straight out if he could crash on my couch. I told him no, I'm not comfortable with having him in my home just yet. I didn't have to mention that I didn't actually have a home. Or a couch. Marion didn't need to know that. He took it with good grace and offered to walk me home at the very least. I accepted because the walk wasn't very long, and he was very nice and charming. You weren't worried about your safety? I shook my head. Of course, I'm always worried about my safety. True statement. I wasn't worried about him, though. I jokingly told him that I knew enough about him that if he turned into an evil beast and attacked me, I know where to send the police. So he walked you home. Marion made a wrap-it-up motion. Very untherapist-like behavior. I nodded. It didn't take long. The bar was only 2 blocks away from where I was staying. As soon as we arrived, he asked again if he could come inside, and I told him no again. I scowled. He started whining a little.
"Aren't you having a good time? Don't you want to continue this conversation?"
I told him no, it was time for him to go. He stumbled a little on the pavement, gave me a charming smile, and said that he was definitely over the limit and couldn't drive home. I told him to leave his car at the bar and call an Uber. He fumbled in his pocket and pulled out his phone, and surprise, surprise, the battery was flat. He pleaded with me to let him inside so he can charge his phone, but I told him that I didn't have the right sort of charger. By now I was angry, and it was showing. I had actually started getting angry a long time before we started walking, but I wanted to see how far this guy was going to push it. I told him to walk back to the bar and let them call him a cab. It was then he realized that I wasn't going to budge. He wasn't coming inside.
"So then he attacked you?" Marion asked in a hushed tone, her eyes bright.
"What?
He attacked you later?"
"He didn't attack me."
"But you were terrified he was going to attack you?"
"No."
"I don't understand," Marion said, straightening up. "I thought this was a story about your trauma."
"No, this is a story about how, apparently, I can't trust anyone. Everyone lies. Everyone pretends to be something they're not, just to get what they want."
"Like you," I added silently.
"Hopefully."
Marion closed her eyes for a moment and regrouped. "I'm sorry," she said. "I can see why this might be relevant to your past trauma, which I suppose we will get to in a moment. Please finish your story."
Anyway, I knew what he'd done. He'd gotten drunk on purpose, so I'd have to let him into my house. And once he was in my house, he expected to get laid. He'd let his phone battery run out as backup, so he could plan my sympathies. He expected that a woman would look after a man who needed her. He'd seriously misjudged me. But then again, I'd misjudged him, so we were both suckers. He started to get really whiny.
"You're going to leave me out here in the cold with no working phone? The bar's probably closed. I won't be able to get them to call a cab. I thought we were having a good time."
I told him bluntly to go and sleep in his car. His expression changed then. He knew he'd lost. In the blink of an eye, he changed from a handsome, charming, slightly stumbly guy into a sneering, spitting asshole. He backed me up against the wall. He called me a stupid whore, a cold bitch, an uncaring, vicious, fat-assed cow.
"And that hurt you?"
Marion's eyes had lit up again. "No, not really." The light dimmed. "I am none of those things. My ass is perfect."
"Well, go on. What happened then?"
"He left. He walked away." Marion looked disappointed. I didn't have to tell her the whole story, after all, about how my date had put his hands on the wall either side of me, boxing me in, or how he'd spat at me and told me that I'd better let him inside or else he was going to make me regret not inviting him in the first place. I didn't have to mention that he put his hand on my throat. And that was it. As soon as he touched me, all bets were off. I have rules, after all. He wasn't lying. He did walk away. He walked away sobbing, cradling the hand that he had dared to put on me. I had shattered all the bones in it. All 27 of them. 5 metacarpal, the 14 proximal, intermediate, and distal bones, as well as all 8 carpal bones. The dull cracks sounded like popcorn in a microwave. Marion sighed audibly.
"Okay," she said, straightening up. "So you had an experience where it was demonstrated to you again that you can't trust anyone, and everyone lies. I'd like to get to the heart of where this comes from, Imogen. Can you tell me about the major trauma that you experienced? The part where you were hurt badly?"
I swallowed. I guess I can."
"Okay."
Marion put the notepad on the table next to her and looked at me.
"I'm going to try something a bit unusual. I think you're strong, Imogen, and I think it might be good for you to tell me the story about how you were hurt, as if you were experiencing it now." Here we go. Do you think... Is this a good idea? She nodded seriously. It will be hard, but I think you can do it. And will it help? Of course. I wouldn't do it if I didn't think it would help. Well, okay then. Hang on. Marion got up and walked to the light switch and dimmed the lights. I watched her movements very carefully. You're going to be in a little trance, and there are a few tools I can use to help you. She picked up the coffee table from beside her and placed it in between us, took out some matches and lit the candle. Now that it was in front of me, I could see that the white frosted glass of the candle actually held pure black wax. A black candle. Bingo. She picked up the old book and flicked through it, opening to a page and setting it down. Old things in candlelight help stimulate memories, she lied easily. I glanced at the book. The pages were yellow with age and covered with a rune-like script. It's just an old Russian Bible, she told me. A family heirloom. I like to have it near. It wasn't Russian, not even close, but it was a good lie to explain away the script. And it wasn't a Bible. In fact, it was nearly the opposite. It was a grimoire, written in the ancient language of the Vrajitore de Sanj, the ancient Romanian blood witches. It's pretty. I leaned closer to read it. I couldn't make out all the runes, but I could understand enough to get the general idea of what it said. She'd opened it at the exact page she needed. It was a spell that would enable the grimoire to draw out dark magic and hold it until it was needed, kind of like a vacuum and a battery storage facility at the same time. I'm just going to say this prayer. Is that okay? Marion put her finger on the book. It's a ritual I like to do. It might help ease your pain. She smiled at me. Such a genuine, pure smile, a smile of satisfaction, and started mumbling the words. This was all the evidence I was waiting for, and everything I needed. This woman was definitely a blood witch. She was exactly what I was looking for. I sat back and smiled, and waited for her to get lost in her spellcraft. There are many different types of witches in the world. Hearth witches, green witches, spirit witches. But they are all the same, really. Their names usually describe the things they use to channel and enhance their powers. Herbs, smoke, crystals, knots, tinctures, rhymes. The list is endless. Everything within nature emits a vibration and carries power. What makes someone a witch is the talent to figure out how to draw power from the objects within nature and use them with intention. A hearth witch might put basil oil in her mop bucket to bring good fortune, and wreath her front door in rosemary for protection. A spirit witch will burn cedar and watch the smoke for signs of the future. They are good witches who worship nature and the moon, women who dance naked in the forests and use the subtle energies that nature gave them back to grow hardy vegetables and keep their livestock fertile. They are harmless. In fact, they only do good things for themselves and everyone around them. They give back to nature. They worship the earth. Unfortunately, because humans are essentially assholes, sometimes that little bit of power corrupts. A good witch might light a red candle, hold a rose quartz crystal, and chant a prayer in Gaelic, and find that the object of her affections suddenly found her attractive. Faced with evidence that the magic worked, she might go looking for more ways to get what she wanted. A curious and careless witch will soon find that the freshly spilled blood of animals holds lots of power. Freshly spilled blood of an innocent human holds even more power. And finally, freshly spilled blood of an innocent child who screams in agony while they're bled to death holds the most power of all. Blood magic is powerful, but it is the darkest magic. It's corrupting and evil. As soon as a witch starts working blood magic, first with bones, then bugs and slugs and mice and rats, then graduating to bigger animals, they'll find it almost impossible to stop. It taints your soul, spell by spell, drop by drop. The power is heady and enticing, and once you start working with it, it's of little consequence when you realize you can only use dark magic for dark, selfish purposes.
You can't cut a virgin over a flaming pit and expect to be able to work a spell to feed a hungry...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?